March 8th meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will come to order. We have one bill on the agenda, Senator Gustafson, House File 5, the School Lunch and Breakfast Program. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Marty and members. Before you is SF-123. As a teacher and a mom of four, I know both sides of this story. My daughter texts me almost daily to ask if her and her sister had enough money in their account for lunch. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Usually I'm able to transfer some money over and it's fine, but there are many years when I struggle to do that. And unfortunately, this is common with many families in Minnesota. As a teacher, I've had countless students come to my classroom looking for food, not just for themselves, but often for their siblings as well. Being hungry makes learning almost impossible. There's no worksheet, assignment, test, project that will matter to a student who hasn't had anything to eat. There's not a reading program or a math strategy that will improve scores if a student doesn't know where their next meal is coming from. First and foremost, providing free meals in schools ensures that all students have access to nutritious food, regardless of their family's income level. Furthermore, providing free meals in schools can also help reduce the financial burden on low-income families. Many families struggle to make ends meet, and the cost of school meals can be a significant expense. By eliminating this cost, we can help ease the financial stress on these families and allow them to use their limited resources on other important expenses. Often we go into our communities and we say we're going to work hard to keep hard-earned money in the pockets of the families that we represent. This bill would do just that. Look at it like a tax cut with the benefit of knowing that kids are getting the food that they need. Additionally, offering free meals in schools can help reduce the stigma associated with receiving free and reduced price meals. Many children are embarrassed to be seen as receiving free meals. This can lead to feelings of shame and isolation. By providing free meals to all students, we can eliminate this stigma and create a more inclusive school environment. Finally, the connection between nutrition and mental health can't be underlined enough. When students have access to nutritious meals, they experience less anxiety, mood swings, and an improved ability to focus. Right now, as we sit here, an estimated 274,886 students are on free and reduced lunches in Minnesota. And that doesn't count low-income families that are just over the qualifications required for free and reduced meals. Universal meals in our schools isn't a publicity stunt. It isn't a nice thing to do. It's a critical policy that will improve the lives of thousands of Minnesota students and families. This bill provides universal lunch and breakfast to all Minnesota school students. It puts money back in the pockets of families. It makes sure students have what they need in school. And most importantly, it ensures that our children have the food they need to learn and be healthy. I'm proud to say that this bill has bipartisan support, including Senator Duckworth, who said, quote, this bill is the right thing to do, something he felt strongly about after talking with his own children. I ask for that same support today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gustafson. And with that, I believe we had a couple of amendments that we have A9 amendments. Is that... Or you wanted to
my apologies, Mr. Chair. I think I did tell you A9, but I was thinking the A7 makes a little bit more sense to do that one first.
Yeah, the A7 amendment, which should be handed out, and Senator Champion moves that, and we're going to incorporate on line 1.1, delete Senate File 123, and insert House File 5. To that amendment, Mr. Nauman, do you want to?
So, Mr. Chair and members, this amendment updates the underlying appropriations for school breakfast and school lunch, in reverse order, for the February forecast. The bill has been here for a while and was drawn originally to the November forecast. So, this updates appropriations for the effect of the changes as well as the new forecast.
Questions on that, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman. So we're updating the forecast on meals served, but we're not making any changes to the underlying fiscal note?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, I think I will let, I'll phone a friend on this one. I know the answer, but Jenna has done a little bit more work on it, so I think she's got a little bit more detail.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Marty and Senator Pratt for the question. So that's correct. So this amendment only updates the underlying base appropriations for school lunch and breakfast aid. It does not make changes as a result of the fiscal note, even though the fiscal note was revised. The new fiscal note is, it incorporates data that's actual data from fiscal year 18 and 19. And so as that's already final data that the amounts are based upon, and we'll get into that in a little bit when we go through the fiscal note, there weren't any changes to the actual fiscal note.
Further discussion, if not, on the A7 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And then Senator Champion, the A9 amendment, I guess, which we would need to incorporate on page 2, line 12, delete supplemental. That will be incorporated in the amendments you offered, Senator Champion. Thank you.
So moved.
Mr. Nauman or Ms. Hoffer?
Mr. Chair and members, I will do a quick run through on this one. If there's detailed questions, Ms. Hoffer can handle them. As a consequence of providing free meals, or universal meals, I should say, there has been some concern that this will act as a disincentive for parents to complete the free and reduced lunch form. And the Senate has spent a little bit of time doing some thinking about how to hold school districts harmless as a result of that potential loss. And so I think what is in front of the committee in the form of the A9 is some calculations related to the compensation revenue pupil units, which is the count that's used for compensatory revenue, acts as a little bit of a hold harmless. Won't say it's a complete hold harmless, but it does hold the pupil counts at the 2024 projected high or actual high, which is before the assumed full count will occur. The new counting procedure will occur in 2025. And if I miss something, I know Ms. Hoffer will correct me.
And this is, it's paid out 90%, 10% the following year?
Mr. Chair, this is what one of the K-12 shifted programs. So yes, you're right. The 90% payment in the current year, and then there's a 10% lagging payment. So that's why the appropriation is structured in that manner. On line 2.14 as well as 2.15.
Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm still a little bit confused on the holding at the 24% high, and maybe Ms. Hoffer can explain if there is a change in how we're counting students. I guess I wasn't aware of that. Not sitting on the education committee anymore.
Ms. Hoffer, and can you move a little closer to the mic or speak a little bit louder, please?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Marty and Senator Pratt, for the question. So we'll take a step back for a second and discuss the ways in which free and reduced price lunch pupils are counted. So there's two different ways that they can be identified. So families can turn in a form that certifies that the student is eligible for free or reduced price lunch. Or a child can be directly certified through a variety of different programs, which would include things like SNAP or Medicaid. And so Medicaid was recently added, and that became part of the November forecast. And as a result, we saw an increase in the number of students who were directly certified and became eligible for free and reduced price lunch. And so as a result of the underlying bill, there is a notion that families will be disincentivized to submit the free and reduced price lunch forms because they're not needed for the student to qualify for a free meal. And so what the A9 amendment does is it attempts to hold districts harmless so they won't lose compensatory revenue as a result of the free school meals bill. So what the amendment does is it directs MDE to look at the actual compensation revenue pupil unit counts for fiscal year 2024 and fiscal year 2025, and then provide compensatory revenue based on the higher of fiscal year 24 actuals or fiscal year 25 actuals. Does that make sense?
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Ms. Hoffer, I'm just kind of curious then what happens after the 2024-2025 school year? Because it looks like this is a one-time payment, and this is going to be a problem that schools face on an ongoing basis.
Ms. Hoffer.
Chair Marty and Senator Pratt, thank you for the question. So you are correct that this is a one-time hold harmless. In fiscal year 2026, the compensatory revenue calculation would revert back to counting compensatory revenue pupil units in the same way as it regularly does. I think what's going on is we're a little unsure of how many students might not turn in forms. And so as a result, this provides a one-time fix, and I think it would be possible for the legislature and MDE to re-examine how many forms were actually not completed and address this in a more complete manner if, in fact, there is a significant reduction in compensatory pupil unit counts as a result of the bill and families not submitting free and reduced price lunch forms.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Hoffer, going back to your other comment, it's not just about the free and reduced lunch form anymore. As you said, it's Medicaid, it's SNAP, it's other benefits that are identifying these students and providing additional supports to the schools. Why will that change, and why do we need to have this piece of it incorporated, right? If presuming that a high percentage of those students, we already have the forms, and any of the students that aren't turning in forms are being picked up through these new ways of identification, right?
Ms. Hoffer.
Chair Marty and Senator Pratt. So currently, a vast majority of free and reduced price lunch pupils on a statewide basis are identified through direct certification. However, on a district level and a charter school level, the percent of students who are directly certified versus those who are counted based on forms varies significantly. And so with the incorporation of Medicaid data to directly certify students, the number of compensatory pupil units has increased, and there's been a better identification of students who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch through that method. However, since the November forecast was the first time that we saw the incorporation of that Medicaid data, it's unclear how many additional students might be identified in future years and what impact that might have on students who are only identified via the form.
And so in other words, we're going to have to find a way to measure to make up for this coming forward, but this takes care of the next year.
Senator Marty, potentially, but it's unclear at this
right.
point.
Again, if students still bring in the forms, but that's not as likely because they don't have any, it's hard enough to get them to right now when there is a reason. Okay. Is there further discussion on the A9 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Discussion on the bill. Senator Friends.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Gustafson. Because of this bill, we're going to have less hungry students, and we're going to appreciate the benefits of that. And to the questions about 2025, 2026, we'll keep working on it because the students will still be the most important part of it. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. I'm a yes.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just a couple of questions. What's the end date on this, or is it just for the next biennium?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, could you clarify, do you mean the end date of the Universal Meals Program?
Yes. How long do you intend this to go on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, there is no end date.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, Senator and so just so I'm having a clear understanding of this, this is for any student that goes to school, no matter what resources they have or their parents may be able to pay. Ultimately, we're taking money away from something else that could go to education. But is that correct? Anybody will get the free meal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, that's correct. A student in school will now receive a lunch and a breakfast as provided by the school, according to this bill. We are collectively paying for this, so there are some things that we just deem important in, you know, in our communities. Teachers have identified this as something that is needed because of the deficiencies we're seeing with our students and food insecurity. Forms are a terrible way of collecting the data. They don't come in. We miss somewhere around 18% of students that we know would qualify. When you talk about mental health, classroom behavior, these are things that will help. And it's one tool that teachers can use to take care of their students and provide the education that we all want for our kids, no matter where they live in our state.
And Mr. Chair, you said everyone's going to receive a breakfast and a lunch. What are they going to do with the breakfasts or lunches that don't get eaten?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrum, that's, you know, it's a great question, but schools can now focus on ways to manage that food that's coming in, knowing that this meal and this bill, this will be new policy. So we trust that our schools will be able to figure it out. Schools have been providing breakfast and lunches for a long time. This just makes sure that they now have the money to provide it.
And Mr. Chair, can you recite for us, what is the dollar amount anticipated over the next 2 years again?
Mr. Nauman, Ms. Hoff. Go ahead, Ms. Hoff.
Chair Marty, Senator Westrum, thank you for the question. We haven't yet gone through the fiscal note, but maybe this would be a good time to do so as it answers Senator Westrum's question.
I'll pause, Mr. Chair, and that'd be a great time to do that.
Sure, thank you. And there's actually two fiscal notes in your packets, members. So the first one that we can address is for Senate File 123, the first engrossment. And so on this one, on the cover page, you'll see that the total cost to the state from the general fund in fiscal year 2024 is $190.1 million. In fiscal year 2025, it's $197.5 million for a biennial total of $387.6 million. In fiscal year 2026, the cost is $205.4 million. In fiscal year 2027, it's $213.6 million for a biennial total of $418.9 million. You can also see on the front of the fiscal note that 2.3 FTEs are assumed to be needed in fiscal year 2023 and 1.5 FTEs per year after that. If you turn to the second page, we'll start into the assumptions about how the amounts were calculated. There's two definitions that I want to make sure that we get from the bill description section first, as they're used in the assumptions section. So first of all, the bill description provides a definition for community eligibility provision. So this is a federal program that provides a higher reimbursement rate based on the number of free and reduced price lunch eligible students in a school. This is known as the Identified Student Percentage, or ISP. And once a school has an ISP of 62.5% or greater, they are eligible under the federal CEP program to receive all meals served at the free rate. So those are the two definitions I wanted to make note of. In the assumptions section, you'll see that it's assumed that schools that have an ISP under 62.5% will automatically qualify for the program, and schools that have an ISP of 62.5% or greater would need to enroll in the CEP program in order to be part of the free and reduced price meal program, and that's because MDE cannot mandate that schools participate in the CEP program. On the third page, it discusses that the amounts that you see in the table below are based on the assumption that each student will receive a breakfast and lunch. However, only meals that are actually served and accepted would be counted for the calculation of the payments. The data used to complete the actual calculation is based on fiscal year 2018 and fiscal year 2019 actual data as a result of the pandemic. The 2018-19 data was more reliable. It's assumed that the participation rate of students will increase by about 4% per year. The costs for the meals below represent some of the Medicaid data as well. That's incorporated, and you can see how that's incorporated in two different lines, the total required CEP lunch savings and breakfast savings. Finally, the FTE costs and minute costs associated with the bill are as a result of needing to hire 2.3 FTEs for nutrition program consultants, and these would provide additional training and technical assistance and review activities for the programs, and then a 1.5 FTE on an ongoing basis to coordinate and maintain the program, as well as a half an FTE to review the existing and the increased volume of CEP work. In the table below, you can see how the assumptions are incorporated. So on the third line of the table, you'll see the total universal meals lunch cost. In fiscal year 2024, you can see that's estimated at $175.2 million. The next line shows the required CEP lunch savings. So this would be federal aid that would be coming into the state to offset the state's cost of the program as a result of schools that are participating in the CEP program. This would reduce the state cost by about $370,000. And that would get you to the total combined lunch cost for fiscal year 2024 of $174.9 million. These calculations are replicated below for the breakfast program. In fiscal year 2024, you can see the total universal meals breakfast cost is estimated at $15 million. The total CEP savings or federal aid coming in would be $185,000. And then the combined breakfast aid as a result of the program would be $14.8 million. The bottom two lines show, again, those total combined lunch and breakfast costs. And if you turn to the fourth page, the next section of the table shows the minute IT costs. And those would be a total of $90,000 in fiscal year 2024. So that would be a one-time basis to update the CLICS data system, which is the IT system that the Department of Education uses for applications and counting meals. And then below that, you can see the FTE costs associated with the bill. I do want to note that in the bill language, the fiscal note assumptions, the 2.3 FTEs at $309,000, that is actually needed for fiscal year 2023. And you'll see in the bill language that the bill appropriates money for that FTE as well as those IT costs in fiscal year 2022 and makes that, or I'm sorry, fiscal year 2023 and makes that money available through fiscal year 2025 for those startup costs. As a result, you get to the total on the bottom line of the table. In fiscal year 2024, again, it's $190.1 million. In fiscal year 25, it's $197.5 million. Fiscal year 26, it's $205.4 million. And fiscal year 2027 is $213.6 million. Mr. Chair, I'm glad to answer questions if there are
Thank
any.
Thank you. Questions on that fiscal note? Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the information on the fiscal note. I had just a couple questions on the CEP program. What percentage of our schools participate in that and meet the federal guidelines? Would be my first question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dreheim, thank you for the question. I don't actually have that number in front of me, though it's possible. If MDE is here, they might know the answer to that question.
Mr. Chair, we do have Mr. Cordy from MDE on virtual.
Assistant Commissioner Cordy, we've got you on now. Go ahead, introduce yourself for the tape as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm an Assistant Commissioner at MDE for the Office of Student Support Services. I don't also have that information in front of me, but I've made a note here and can make a request of our staff quickly here and hopefully get it to you during the pendency of this committee, if not quickly after.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. I think
to have the assumption for the fiscal note, we must have some idea what percentage of schools would participate in that program. My next question, Chair, has to do with that third paragraph on page 3 with the increase of 4% from previous year. Is that assumption based on population growth or some other metric?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dreheim, are you referring to the fiscal note? I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right thing.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And could you, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, can you repeat the question, Senator
sure.
Dreheim?
Yeah, I'm looking at the fiscal note on page 3. It's kind of the third paragraph where it talks about using the 18-19 data. And then an increase of 4% from the previous year is used for the calculation. I was wondering if that was based on population growth or why the 4%. Is that just inflation? How'd you come up with 4%, I guess, is my question. Thank you.
Ms. Huffer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Marty. My understanding is that it's based on an increased usage of the program, given the ability for everyone to have a meal at no cost. So in other words, it would be based on the number of students who are actually taking that free breakfast or free lunch during the school day. As you know, students can bring their own lunch to school, so it's assumed that there would be a 4% increase each year from the students who would be taking a lunch or a breakfast.
So we're, thank you. So Chair and members, we're not calculating the population change at all. We're just saying that we're gonna have more people participating in the program and we believe it's gonna be 4%. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dreheim, that's correct. That is the fiscal note assumption.
Thank you. And Chair, if I could have one last question. Thank you. My 14-year-old son, who is very active, requires a second lunch. Would that be available under this program? We currently, with some arm twisting from the school, the first probably 45 days of school, he wasn't able to get a second lunch. And the portion sizes are quite small. And for some of these kids that are quite active and work out or in multiple sports, they need more than what the school's providing. We currently pay for our lunches and are happy to continue to do that. But under this program, would he be able to get seconds, if you will?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dreheim, it's a great question. No, this bill allows for one breakfast and one lunch. I have four kids. There's a coffee shop at their school. There's all sorts of fun things. That's not what this does. This is making sure that every student has a breakfast and a lunch. Anything that's sort of extra or a second lunch, that is not part of this bill.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and thanks for the author for the comment. I am concerned about the portion sizes. I know, which is ironic coming from me, but my kid is like a lot of kids where they work out either before school or after school, plus they play sports, and they do need more food. But thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Is there further discussion on this fiscal note? Okay, Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, a couple of questions. Can you explain the 62% threshold? I didn't follow that completely. You said schools below the 62% threshold will be enrolled in the free breakfast and lunch, but schools over 62% can't be compelled to, and they may or may not. Can you explain that just a little bit more? I'm not tracking that or following that, where that comes from.
Ms. Hoffer.
Senator Marty and Senator Westrom, thank you for the question. So essentially the way the program works is if a school is a participant in both the National School Breakfast and the National School Lunch Program, and they have an identified student percentage of less than 62.5% of their students eligible for free and reduced price lunch, they would automatically be enrolled in the free school meals program. For schools that are participating in the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program and have a free and reduced price lunch percentage over the 62.5%, those schools would need to enroll in the federal CEP program in order to generate that federal aid, and then that would qualify them to be part of the free school meals program under this bill. And it's my understanding that the intent of that is to ensure that additional federal aid would come to the state to help offset the state cost of the program.
So, Mr. Chair, if I can get my mind wrapped around this. So schools that have a high free and reduced lunch count right now would not automatically be enrolled in this, but schools that have a low free and reduced lunch count would be compelled to or have to enroll in it? Is that kind of right? It's kind of reverse, if I understood you right.
Senator Marty and Senator Westrum, that's correct. The fiscal note does assume that all schools that are eligible to participate in CEP at the 62.5% or higher would enroll in CEP because the incentive is great enough for them to want to participate in both to generate the additional aid. So it's assumed that all schools that are eligible for CEP would participate in CEP and therefore the free school meals program.
So, Mr. Chair and to the testifier, if a school decides not to, do we have a payment in lieu of a free lunch or free breakfast? They would just say that's not as big a priority in our school as class size reduction or a teacher for this or a counselor for mental health. Would there be a payment they could receive instead if they elected not to enroll in this program?
Senator Marty and Senator Westrum, yes. So if a school was not participating in the free school meals program because they were either not participating in both the National School Lunch and Breakfast Program or the CEP program, they would still be eligible for state aid under the current model for both school lunch and school breakfast. And so you can see that language on page 2, line 10, maintains the existing school lunch aid amounts for those schools. And then on page 4, page 6, line 6.5 and 6.6 maintains the breakfast amounts under the current system, and those schools that were not participating in the free school meals program would still receive that aid.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so they'd receive their current aid. Is it assumed that there's more money going to the school if they provide free breakfast and free lunch for everybody, or is that not an automatic?
Senator Marty and Senator Westrum, that's correct. So schools would receive a higher reimbursement rate under the free school meals program than they would under the existing model for school lunch and school breakfast reimbursement. Under the free school meals program, schools would receive the difference between the average federal meal cost and the federal reimbursement rate. And so that would get them to the total federal average meal cost.
And can you share with us what those amounts are?
I don't have those amounts in front of me. I apologize, but we can get them to the committee.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, to the author, so this is about $200 million a year that's going to come out of education budgets that hasn't existed before. Have you thought about putting this on the formula or something else that would give each school the option to provide meals if they thought that was the most critical thing in their district, as opposed, or maybe teacher salaries or smaller class size as an option? Or is it, have you given any thought to that, Senator Gustafson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrum, I have given so much thought to that. I also have spent the last decade in a classroom. So just to answer a couple of your things, there is a lot of money coming to schools. As Vice Chair of the Education Finance committee, we are working on a formula increase, putting money on the cross subsidy, hiring more teachers, more school counselors, mental health support. All of those things are coming, and there are things that I prioritize. I think, as most of you know here in the room, I've been a teacher, a public school teacher, for a long time. In fact, I was a teacher up until December, and then I got ready to take office. So one of the things that I'll just mention is that this isn't we're giving a breakfast and a lunch to students, and therefore teachers aren't getting a fair wage. If you would like to join me on a bill to make sure that teachers make a living wage, I'd be happy to sign that with you. But this isn't about that. This is more about making sure that our students and our schools have exactly what they need. And part of what they need is food, food they can depend on every day that's available to them at the place that we require them to go. It is helpful. It's sort of a blended and layered approach, but making sure that kids have the food that they need in schools means that their mental health will be better. It means their classroom behavior will be better. It means that they'll be able to focus on learning because they won't be in a classroom with an empty stomach. And again, we can go back to all of the great math strategies and reading programs that we could invest in, and that's all worthwhile too. But none of those things are going to matter if a student comes to school hungry. They just aren't going to be able to focus on any of that. And so this is really part of an education plan. And it's a great question, and it's a fair question, but it's also part of an education plan that makes sure that our students are cared for at our schools. And in Minnesota, we put a high priority in our schools.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Listrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gustafson, that's a wishful line of thinking. I've been around here long enough to know that every $100 million we spend on something else does take away from money that could go to something else, such as classroom reduction. I mean, so what we're doing here, it isn't that we aren't providing free or reduced lunch for children that don't have the means. We've already got that program that exists in our state. We're taking more money out of the coffers to pay for kids and families that already have the means to pay for their children's lunch or elect not to participate in a free program from the government for whatever reason. But now we're going to take this money and divert it from children's mental health, smaller class size reductions, or something else that might be important, but that's because this is going to be the priority and where the money is spent instead. And so I'm still trying to figure out if this is a wise move in the big picture of education to fund lunches for those that could pay for it themselves and at the expense of a better education, better literacy, or targeted programs or class size reduction that will be the effect of taking this money off the bottom line. Another question, Mr. Chair, and I think it's my last one. Sure, Mr. Chair, how does this bill work when we don't have targets? Is the plan that this might pass on the floor before we get a budget resolution or budget targets to kind of understand what amount of monies we're going to spend, or how does this factor into the budget targets for education?
Sure, good question, Senator. And we are assuming this bill passes, which the bill has passed the House, and we're hoping to pass it off here today. I'm hoping we can today. But this bill would be, obviously you see the price tag on it, and we will be counting this, and we recognize that's part of what's going into the education funding, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it for now.
Senator, on this fiscal note first, and we have another fiscal. Anything else on this fiscal note? Don't we get to the other one? Go ahead, Ms. Hoffer.
Thank you, Senator Marty. So the next fiscal note in your packets, members, is based on the 9A amendment that was adopted. And this was the amendment that provided the compensatory hold harmless language for fiscal year 2025. On the front page of the fiscal note, you can see that the total cost to the state general fund is $9,000 in fiscal year 2024. In fiscal year 2025, the amount is $5.4 million. And in fiscal year 2026, the amount is $604,000. And there are no FTEs assumed for the amendment. On the second page of the fiscal note, we get into the assumptions about how the amounts were calculated. And so what MDE did was they looked at the fiscal year 2024 data for compensatory revenue at the district level. MDE does not have site level data, but what they did was they estimated the site level data for fiscal year 2024 and fiscal year 2025. Based off of the compensatory revenue total amounts. The compensatory revenue budget in fiscal year 2025 under the February 2023 forecast is estimated at $758 million. The site level calculation is based on the total compensatory revenue per pupil formula allowance of $6,024, which is the formula allowance minus $839, which is a statutory formula. Student population reductions in fiscal year 2025 would result in an overall loss to districts, and that's how the entitlement was arrived at of $6 million. So essentially the difference between compensatory revenue in fiscal year 2024 and fiscal year 2025 at the site level is estimated to be $6,038,000. So as the bill appropriates the greater of fiscal year 24 or 25 actual pupil units. That's how the $6 million was arrived at. The bill also would have an IT cost to update the data systems in order to make the calculation. And so in the data table below, you can see that the entitlement in fiscal year 2025 is estimated at $6 million. As alluded to earlier, the K-12 education formulas are paid 90% in the current year and 100% in the following year. And this is typically to account for changes in actual data, such as pupil counts. So the 90% current payment in fiscal year 2025 is $5,434,000. On page 3, the 10% final payment is $604,000, which is how you arrive at the amounts for 24 and 25 on the front of the fiscal note. And then finally, the IT costs of $8,800 in fiscal year 2024 are shown as well. Thank you.
Are there questions on this fiscal note? If not, discussion back to the bill. We have Senator Dames and Senator Pappas online.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gustafson. Can you tell me, are there other states that have implemented this program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I believe we would be the third or fourth state to do this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up. And could you tell me, Senator Gustafson, you talked about how these free lunches for everybody is going to improve learning skills, it's going to improve the grades, it's going to improve the behavior, this, that, and the next thing. Do you have any statistics from these other states showing that this actually happened? Or is this just what we're assuming will happen according to the request of folks in education?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I don't have the data points on other states' students and their levels of behavior in classrooms, but I can do some research for you and bring it to the committee. I can tell you from my own experience and working in several different schools, both charter schools, public schools, private schools, and I'm not alone. I've worked with hundreds of teachers, so you can use my experience as data if you would choose or not, but I will just share that it is a real problem. It's a concern. Anybody who's in the classroom knows that. People who aren't in the classroom probably don't understand the level of concern it is to have students come into your room every day looking for food for them, for their siblings, something for breakfast, something for lunch. Maybe the most heartbreaking is kids who come to you on the afternoon right before a school break, asking if they have anything or if you have anything in your classroom that they can take home with them. It might surprise you what these students look like. Students are really good at blending in and looking like everybody else, despite what might be going on at home. So I hear the concerns about this could be, we could use this for education, we could use that for education. I can't stress to you enough how good of money this is. This is for schools. This is money well spent on schools because it goes directly to students, which will help them as they learn. I think anybody who's in a classroom knows that. And I can attest to that myself. As of December, I saw that myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gustafson. So we have plenty of laws on the books. So first of all, we have free and reduced lunches, and the schools are doing that. We also have anti-lunch shaming programs that have been implemented, and those seem to be working. So, and you're shaking your head, they're not. So what needs to be done to get those to work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, so that's, you're talking about the National School Lunch Program. That catches a lot of kids. Direct certification will go on to catch even more kids. We know that about 18.5% of our students here aren't getting caught for various reasons, whether it be the obstacle of a form, maybe it's mental health issues at home with parents, maybe it's kids who come from a divorced parents, a blended family, who have income discrepancies. Also, life happens. You might have a job in September, and you might not have that job in January. All sorts of things happen, so we know that we miss a lot of those kids. It's tough to find that 18.5% with just forms because it puts the responsibility of the forms on them. And if parents aren't doing it for various reasons that may or may not be their fault, I don't want to blame parents for this, but sometimes it's not their fault. And if the forms don't get turned in, the person that suffers is the student. So what we're trying to do is eliminate that from happening. But we're also asking that, you know, most schools participate in the National School Lunch Program, which is a federal program. That's part of this bill, too, is making sure that federal dollars are used first, and then the state will help.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Gustafson, this 18.5%, are those current numbers? Where is that number coming from?
Senator Marty and Senator Dames, thank you for the question. I can respond to that. The data set from this past fall's free and reduced price lunch counts shows that of the total number of students who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch, 18.5% of those students are only eligible as a result of a form that was submitted. The remainder of students were directly certified for free and reduced price lunch.
And can you tell me, Mr. Chair, and Senator Gustafson, can you tell me how much that percentage changed when the lunch shaming program came into place? Did that number go down?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, there's no evidence that that number went down.
And you statistically have statistics to show that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I don't have statistics.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Senator Gustafson. Appreciate the information, and thank you.
Is there further discussion? Senator Pratt. Oh, she stepped out, and so go ahead.
Just a couple of thoughts here. Senator Gustafson, you just mentioned that, yeah, look, I understand that it's hard for a hungry kid to learn, and I get that you see this every day, and I'm not going to try to discount your experience at all. I'm just kind of curious, though. You mentioned you've got kids coming in, you know, looking, you know, they don't know where their next meal is coming from. They're looking for food to take home before a break, maybe for siblings for the evening meal. How will this bill help that? As I understand it, and let me just say, you know, this is covering breakfast and lunch, but this isn't going to cover evening meal. This isn't going to cover Christmas break. It's not going to cover spring break. How does that experience fit in? Because we're using this as an example, and it's not even relevant.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, that's a great question. And I love that question. One of the things that I would say is that this isn't going to solve all of the problems of poverty and all of the students who are living below and just slightly above the line of poverty. But this helps, right? This means that we know that they're going to have at least two meals. Outside of that, I'm going to rely on other resources that I would have in my classroom. And you're right, there's lots of problems. I've had to buy kids winter coats, reading glasses, toys that they could give their siblings for Christmas. That doesn't do any of this. But this helps, and this gets us one step farther to making their lives a little bit better. And so I can't stress enough that this is putting money back in the parent or in the pockets of people, families across Minnesota, and at the same time it's doing a really good public good of something that we desperately need help with.
Senator Pratt.
Well, you know, again, Mr. Chair, I agree that, you know, it's important for kids to learn. I appreciate that Senator Gustafson, you know, agrees that her example isn't relevant to the bill. You know, what we're talking about is subsidizing meals for families that quite honestly can afford it. And to Senator Dame's point, when I was on the Education Committee, I worked on the anti-lunch shaming issue. And you know, it's interesting that as I look at line 1.18 through 1.21 of the bill, it actually says that once a meal on a tray or otherwise served the meal to the student, the meal may not subsequently be withdrawn from the student by the cashier or any school official. We have programs in place for every kid that needs a meal to get one. And as Senator Dame said, if the laws aren't working right, we should be looking at ways to get better compliance with the law, with the existing laws, get them to work better. As Senator Gustafson said, 18% of kids that qualify aren't participating. Well, that means 82% are. And we're going to go ahead and upend the entire system for 82% of kids to cover 18%. And I agree with where Senator Dreheim was going. I mean, one of the reasons we have hungry kids is that, particularly those that are active, I mean, kids burn a lot of calories. They're not getting enough to eat. And where they have the opportunity today to maybe get a second meal, I'm looking at line 3 on page 3, basically saying they get, here we go, a maximum of one breakfast and one lunch per school day. So we're still going to have hungry kids. You know, I think more importantly, we have local school boards to address these issues. And $200 million a year is roughly 3% on the formula. And if this is a problem for a community, they should be able to address it. We hear a lot about standing up for local control, and yet this is just nothing but another mandate that at some point in time will be underfunded. And it's, you know, I find it interesting that, you know, while this program will eventually be underfunded, just like special ed was eventually underfunded, we won't be increasing the reimbursement. I find it doubtful we'll be increasing the reimbursement rates for those schools that don't participate in the program. And to Senator Westrom's question, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to figure out why we've got this bill in front of us today. Because there's no expenditure until fiscal year 2024. And I fail to see the urgency in this, since we're not going to be rolling out a program until next year. and I think it just ought to go through the normal budgeting process. If the Education Finance Committee decides that this is how they want to use their target, then they should use it that way. But I just continue to see the bills coming from the majority, spending money in the next year's budget ahead of even targets being set, that won't have any impact until after the new budget kicks in. So, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that, but I think I continue to be frustrated by the majority's process of spending hundreds of millions of dollars before we move forward. And it looks like I'm going to get the lawyer response to my comments.
Senator Frenz.
Well, first of all, thank you, Senator Pratt, Senator Draham, Senator Westrum, Senator Dames. We should be asking questions about the money, but I just want to make the quick point here, Senator Gustafson, for everybody. We're talking about providing food for these students at the time when it is the most helpful for what we're trying to focus on, which is their education. And for that reason, I'll be a yes vote on sending this bill to the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Gustafson, I remember hearing a few years ago when on standardized testing days, a number of school districts figured out they provide universal meals to everyone and their test scores went up. And so they decided it's a great thing to do. Whenever there's a standardized test, we'll provide free meals. The question is, what about all the other days? Because the kids have learned better so they can do better on the test. So I applaud you for bringing the bill. Is there further discussion on the bill? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Gustafson and members of the committee. And with that, we have a meeting tomorrow. And Friday, we're going to have one. Apparently, Senator Pappas, your bonding bill is going to be before us on Friday afternoon. And for those who are planning to be out of town on Friday, we are taking remote voting that day. So please let our office know if you're interested in that. With that, this meeting's adjourned.